you only get tested maybe at this level once in 4 years, you know what I mean? You got a balls to kick them.
So England in possession, haven't had much of this ball.
And it kicks it away again.
Toby Flood.
Don't sink!
This is not soccer. This is not soccer.
Because in either game, life or rugby, the margin for error is so small.
So here we are in Fukuoka on the southern island of Kyushu for the latest edition of the Irish Examiner's Rugby World Cup podcast. My name is Brendan O'Brien and with me as usual is my colleague and travelling partner Simon Lewis. So Fukuoka is our fifth city after Chiba, Yokohama, Hamamatsu and Kobe as we follow Joe Schmidt's Ireland team around the country, and the hope is that this is a spot where they finally discover themselves and produce the type of performance against Samoa next Saturday on the 12th of October that reignites what's been a faltering World Cup bid. Today's show is brought to you by the 100% electric Nissan Leaf, Ireland's best-selling electric car that could save your family thousands every year. Visit evsavings.ie to see just how much you can save by switching to the 100% electric Nissan Leaf today. Nissan. Innovation that excites. So Simon, we're here in Fukuoka, literally a matter of hours. I think it's fair to say that the first impressions have been good and that this might be a base where the Ireland players, staff and, dare I say it, the media will enjoy themselves after what was a kind of a bizarre choice of location in Rocco Island and in Kobe.
It was kind of bizarre. I'm careful not to bite the hand that feeds here, but we are guests of a nation, and I'd hate to do the citizens of Rocco Island, who I understand one of whom is Dan Carter, has an apartment on Rocco Island, a man-made island out in the Osaka Bay, in the port of Kobe. You can't really see the water for all the cranes.
No, it is a port. I think that's the good point to mention.
Yeah, but look, let's not knock it. Fukuoka or Fukuoka, whichever way.
That's the big question, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. It seems lovely, doesn't it? Let's face it, we're in a much nicer hotel now. We're in the team gaff, so it should be nice. So we're happy bunnies right now.
And I mean, like people might say that this is unimportant stuff, but it really is. It does matter, doesn't it? I mean, these guys have been away from home for 3 weeks now. They were in Carlton House for God knows how many months, and
so were the team.
but. In fairness, like, I mean, those surrounds do make a difference. And, okay, hands up, I had a bit of a go at Shutter Island, as we called it, in the column last week. But Kobe City was beautiful. A lovely, lovely spot. And, you know, we had lovely beef and I had a beautiful onsen and stuff like that. And it was great. But just where they were, I mean, it was, 45 minutes out in public transport? Yep. It was a long way from the city and there was nothing to do on Rocco Island. And you step out of the hotel here in Fukuoka and you can see the neon lights of the central city. There's coffee shops around the place. There's a massive, what would you call it, department store, a shopping centre.
Yep, huge multiplex cinema as well. And there's stuff going on and players need that. They don't want to be, at the risk of harking back to 2007 where they were stuck on an industrial estate. That sends people, anyone spare. They're all human, after all. And when you go abroad or you're in any environment, whether it's work or pleasure, you want to have some stimulation. And I think they'll get it this week for 9 days in Fukuoka. And they're starting it with a weekend off, which is probably the best thing for them after a fairly hectic 11 or 12 days, three matches. Obviously, in the middle of all that was a disastrous result against Japan that has really rocked everyone back on their heels, and the 35-0 victory over Russia Thursday night now back in Kobe, long dearly missed Kobe, is has not eased any of the pressure in any shape or form.
So it kind of does say a lot about where we're at in terms of Ireland's World Cup ambitions, doesn't it? That, you know, we're putting some store in where they are and they can go outside and get a coffee, things like that. You know, there's been a lot of positive talk from coaches and players this week. And if I heard Japan being talked of as a blip once, I've heard it 10 times. Yeah. A blip, losing a world, let's move on. But they're not in a good place. I mean, that's fair to say, isn't it? I mean, they're struggling for form. That Scotland result, which we raved about at the time, has been put into really sharp context, how bad Scotland were. And we talked about that in the podcast the first week, do you remember?
Yep.
On a sliding scale of Ireland good versus Scotland bad. You might have said that was maybe 70-30, and now it looks very much a different kind of equation there. So how good or how bad a place are they in right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to pick on that point, I mean, the Scotland game is now the performance that looks like the blip. And that's a severe worry, because Scotland wouldn't be the chief, as obviously their most important rival in Pool A, or so it seemed at the time. But they're not one of the top four contenders for this World Cup this year. And Ireland had bigger fish to fry, and they put Scotland away fair enough. But like, they're going to need to up their game considerably if they are going to have any hope of beating either a South Africa or a New Zealand in a quarter final. And this, again, coming back to location, this gives, and the space that they've got now time-wise, 9 days to build into a Samoa game that can provide a real platform to go at the quarterfinals and maybe restore some momentum and maybe get some fluency back in their performance. Don't forget, I mean, there was a mix and match team on Thursday night. It wasn't the first choice team. Johnny Sexton looked pretty good, I have to say, in the first 40 minutes before he was withdrawn for whatever reason. It seems as if it might be preordained, although who knows with any Ireland player anymore as regards injuries or not having injuries. But so, you know, it's a long way off their full test team that will be expected to front up in a quarter final. So I think there are mitigating factors, some of which we'll also return to from Thursday night. But they're not in a good place. They can't be in a good place because, you know, any suggestion that they're in a bad place is met with such resistance that it's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it?
You protest too much, sir.
Exactly. Yeah. And players getting snappy. What's wrong with beating a team 35-0? Peter Amani called them a quality Russia side. Now, look, I know it's all about respect and stuff, yeah. But you know, even Russia's head coach Lynn Jones said they had 0.0001% chance of winning that game, you know, as you say, the Irish players protest too much.
Yeah, and on that note, I mean, we were both at the briefing again this morning in Kobe before we left, and Rory Best was up and he talked very, very well, and a lot of those thoughts will be in the Irish Examiner in Saturday's edition. But one thing that struck me, I think, earlier on in the live section was he was talking about an Irish team doing the basics right. And this has stuck in my craw over the last couple of days. Every time I hear this, I'm thinking, I don't hear Steve Hansen or Razzy Erasmus or Eddie Jones at this stage in a World Cup cycle talking about doing the basics right. And this is a team that's been in camp together nearly 4 months. And you talked about mitigating factors under war. the humidity in Kobe, 11 changes, it wasn't their first team, but how many reps did those guys do together? And one image that sticks in my mind from Thursday night is Bundy Aki in oceans of space, maybe not far outside the Russian 22, a dropping ball coming to him, nobody within, you know, I don't know, 10 yards of him, and the ball, it didn't just slip through his fingers, I think it missed his fingers. And these are basics that a team that was so on, so good, so down with the basics in 2018, all these games we've seen them do this now, and it's a repeat pattern. It's the same show we're seeing the whole time. So,
as sometimes, you know, Rory Best quotes are, you know, sometimes it's almost default. We need to do the basics well. I think the difference is, the All Blacks and the Springboks do spend time on the basics quite clearly. It's drilled. It's in their drills every training session. They just don't talk about needing to do them well. It's a given that they're going to do them well. And yeah, Ireland shouldn't be scrambling around talking like that, really, should they? You know, that Bundy Aki miss was symptomatic of a team that isn't totally focused to me, or certainly a player that wasn't totally focused. And that's not what you've come to expect from a Joe Schmidt side. So I just wonder, you know, where's it going? Where's all this leading to? Have we reached, you know, the nadir? Is the only way up? Because we've reached a couple of nadirs already this summer. And I don't know, it's a bit of a concern, isn't it? For all the positivity that you want to believe from the Island camp, there's just something nagging away that tells you we'll all be home after the quarter final.
Yeah, and Roland Agara has spoken about this in Friday's Irish Examiner in his column as well. I mean, you know, the standout quote in it is, he feels confidence is skin deep in there. And there's a line in it where Raj says, I get it. You know, he's been there. He's been at World Cups where things have been difficult, and how difficult it can be to turn it around. And you know, somebody said it during the week, you know, there's no lack of effort. And but that's totally missing the point, isn't it? It's not about effort. It's not about... momentum is a very, very, you know, silky thing in sport. It's very hard to get it. And sometimes when you get it, you can't stop it. And sometimes when you don't have it, it's just impossible to get it back, isn't it?
Yeah. I think he refers to kind of pushing the envelope too much, trying too hard, forcing things. Because that's certainly been Ireland's pitfall, or one of them, in the past, when they get behind in games. And they didn't go behind until late on against Japan. But when you are chasing things, you force things, and more mistakes happen. So, and that is a knock-on effect for confidence as well, because if you're not executing well, then you're not going to have confidence, are you? And you're not going to get momentum without executing well. So it's kind of a vicious cycle, really, isn't it? Like, that, you know, how do you snap out of it? And Rory Best, in fairness to him, has made quite a few suggestions about how they get better, how they fix these things. And one of them was not looking too far ahead, focusing on the next moment. Don't get, you know, it's a mantra for them, or it has been in the past, next job focused, rather than exacerbating the general demise by making mistake after mistake. And that includes looking ahead to a quarter final, which I suspect Ireland were going into that Japan game. They took that, they could, you know, they went 12-3 up inside 20 minutes and didn't go for the jugular. And that was part of the problem, that, and handing the momentum and the front foot to Japan, getting the Japanese crowd behind them in Shizuoka, it's a snowball effect, and Ireland were on the wrong end of it. And that's it in a nutshell, really, that they have to kind of just snap out of this downward spiral.
Yeah, and it has been worrying, the fact that, like, what was it, an hour against Japan without a score? Was it a half an hour against Russia, who played for 60 minutes with 14 men? These are all very worrying statistics, and you don't need statistics even to kind of, you know, bear the truth of what you see with your own eyes. But let's be a little bit positive, I suppose, just for a change, to balance it. Yay! The defence has been very good. I mean, the defence was, especially after Twickenham, was held up as a, oh my God, this is a car crash waiting to happen. Now, again, let's put in perspective who they've played, but 22 points in 3 games, 1 shutout. Scotland kept 3 points. This is Cup rugby, and the conditions, which we might as well mention here as well, the All Blacks made 12 handling errors against Namibia the other night. 5 knock-ons. Now, their average is 4, so that wasn't a huge amount more. But we're seeing in this World Cup that playing attacking rugby and keeping the ball in your hand is a difficult situation. So can Ireland, if they just kind of, you know, rein in some of the mistakes in the attacking line, and if they continue to defend and keep score lines down, can that be enough to maybe punch through and get them through this lull?
Quite possibly, because what Ireland do, when Ireland are doing well, they're doing the basics well. We're back to that again. And that's not making mistakes. That's executing. That's not dropping the ball over the line. As happened on the other night in Kobe. I think it was Ian Henderson who was at fault. That's getting your lineouts right and doing that, all that kind of stuff. It's it's not rocket science, is it really? As complicated as some of the laws of rugby are, it's quite a simple game in terms of what you have to do to execute an efficient game plan.
But isn't that the frustrating part of it? Do you know what I mean? It seems
you're trying to be positive. We're in a downward spiral, Brent.
That didn't last very long, in fairness. But I mean, that is the frustrating part of it, that they are basics. It's, you know, if Ireland were doing the basics right, and they were, if they'd got through to this point with three wins, we would probably still be looking at it going, don't know, is that enough to beat the All Blacks or South Africa in a quarter final? But at least it would be the basics, and it's the fact that those basics aren't right. I mean, you talk about an hour without a score against Japan, a half an hour against Russia. I keep coming back to this. We were both at this game, the All Blacks and the Springboks. The All Blacks won that game in 3 minutes. Mm. 3 minutes. And you look at the first, after Rob Kearney's opening try for Ireland against Russia the other night, the next 12 minutes were abysmal. I don't think they did anything right. And that was with Jonathan Sexton on the pitch. That's 12 minutes of misadventure from an Irish side, which is four times as much as South Africa put in, arguably. And that was more about All Black brilliance. Mm. So these are margins we're talking about here. You know, it's a worrying situation. And then we come to, you know, another aspect of this, the injuries. So where do we start with the injuries and where do we finish?
Well, a number of them have been injuries in training, soft tissue injuries. Robbie Henshaw's hamstring. Now he's been training away for the last couple of days. I think he took part in a full training session. What's during the captain's run? Apparently he's ready to go. They stuck with him. Some players may have been sent home. They wouldn't be prepared to wait for him, but they've waited for him until Samoa. He's obviously an integral part of Joe Schmidt's thinking. As we've said before, he was probably in line to be the starting 13 alongside Bundiaki in that midfield against the Scots. Gary Ringrose has stepped in and, you know, put in a Trojan shift. Three lots of 80 minutes. He could barely celebrate his try when he scored the other night against Russia, the fifth and final try. He had another one disallowed, by the way. Ireland did get over the line more than the five times, and two disallowed tries, I think it was, in the end, wasn't it? Who else have we got injured? Chris Farrell missed Thursday's game against Russia with a concussion. The game just came too soon. He faced the media today. He looks fine. He should be part of the selection equation. The real worry is Geordie Murphy, who only turned up last Sunday in Tokyo, joined up with the squad in Kobe the next day as an injury replacement for Jack Conan, who fractured his foot, and has apparently popped his rib quite early on against Russia. He was facing a scan the last we heard. That was today, Friday. So maybe over the weekend the RFU will tell us the results of that scan.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe they'll just put someone on a plane and and send someone out, and Geordie will be shuffled back off to Ulster. So who knows? But the other injuries... Rob Kearney came off with tightness in his groin. You have to assume he'll be absent this weekend or the weekend after next against Samoa. And then the other concern for me, at least, is Joey Carberry, whose ankle injury against Italy August the 10th has come back to haunt him. What was the description of what happened to him during the captain's run, or after he reported irritation, whatever that means? Yeah. You know, it's clearly an issue. He's had injuries there before. He's having a terrible run, both with Munster and Ireland. But whenever we've seen him, he's been pretty sharp, hasn't he? He was electric in that first 50 minutes against Italy during the summer. And you just wonder, you know, is it more than an irritation? Because we'd never get the full picture. And I understand the privacy issues around that as well, that players insist upon or have the right to insist upon. But, you know, are they covering up something that's worse than it actually is? It's an awful shame if he doesn't get to participate fully in this World Cup.
A shame and a huge blow as well. I mean, when you consider how important Johnny Sexton is, and when you consider everything that went into getting Joey Carberry down to Munster, and, you know, with a view to avoiding the situation that happened 4 years ago when Ian Madigan came in for Johnny Sexton in that quarter final against Argentina with very little rugby at 10 under his belt. But I mean, that's all very true. And yet one thing that stands out for me in the last week is the issue suddenly with the back row. I mean, even when Ireland were, let's face it, crap, the back row was considered an area of strength for Ireland. Good, bad or indifferent, we seem to have this conveyor belt of options in the back row. And yet here we are in a situation where, with Dan Levy out and Sean O'Brien out, and you can even go back to when Jamie Heaslip got injured, suddenly we're in a situation where CJ Stander is really the only fit number eight, and he's the guy who doesn't normally play a number eight. So we're in a situation now where there's bare bones in some aspects of the squad, which is not great when we have the Samoans coming up in Fukuoka, as we'll call it, on Saturday week. So what are you expecting team-wise from Joe Schmidt? Because obviously all going well and beating Japan, the team would have been very different to what it would likely be next week.
It will. I mean, I suspect they've kind of had to have a major rejig because they lost Sexton for the Japan game, which kind of alters what they want to get out of him. He played 40 minutes. I don't think we'll see him against Samoa, given the Samoans' ill discipline over their first two games. They play Japan as well, so who God knows who else they're going to lose to a sighting or whatever. Hopefully not, but they've also got some injuries themselves in the back row as well. So Jack Lamb's come back from an injury, and I think they've lost their number eight as well. So there's, you know, it's a tough one to choose a team against the week before a semi-final. I mean, a quarter-final. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Again.
Next game focused. Yeah. So, you know, they've got this week's lead into Samoa, but it could be an awkward kind of test for Ireland because, you know, Samoa want to go out with a bang.
Literally.
And obviously we don't know what they're going to do against Japan. They might cause a shock, who knows? I don't think so, judging on watching them last Monday against Scotland, because they looked pretty atrocious, didn't they?
They did, yeah. So,
but selection wise, yes. What does he do? He's going to have to keep some players wrapped in cotton wool, I would suspect. You know, some players need time. Robbie Henshaw's going to need to play. Gary Ringrose needs a rest. He's played three consecutive 80 minutes. You know, you'd want to see Joey Carberry back ideally, but do they risk him again now? That's another conundrum. So does Jack Carty start yet again? You know, and who backs up as fly half? It's so
many questions, so which we didn't expect to have at this point in the World Cup, and that's the thing about it. So, given all this talk about personnel, let's wrap it up on some comments from Simon Zeebo today about the RFU's overseas restrictions on players representing their country. And let's go back to the start of the World Cup.
Why would you mention that?
I don't know. Is there something in it for him? I don't know. But let's go back to the start of the tournament. Simon obviously was part of a very tongue-in-cheek video for a certain company, wearing a beret and doing Japanese, or wearing Japanese garb and learning the Japanese language and all that. So he sees it from a tongue-in-cheek point of view, but it's a serious point that some people come back to now and then. And you look at a player like Simon Zeebo or Donica Ryan, who are playing overseas, and what we wouldn't give to have them in the squad at this point in time. Like, you put those two lads alone into this squad now and suddenly you feel a little bit better about yourself. So this is an argument that goes back and forth. I know my views on it. Where do you stand on it? Should there be some sort of Aussie or Welsh type exemption for these guys, or like Argentina do in World Cup year, they allow the guys who don't play for the Jaguares to come back in and, hey, here you are, put on the famous jersey and we'll do it for 1 year only?
Look, I don't think there's many Ireland supporters that wouldn't love to see Simon Zeebo back in an Ireland shirt. I mean, he brings so much to the party, and it is a party, so it would seem, when he does come back. And there wouldn't be many long faces in the squad. I'm sure there's characters in this Ireland squad, as it is, but Zeebo does bring something extra to morale, to your attacking options. And, you know, but he's not going to get a World Cup spot. And Joe Schmidt's tenure is on, you know, it's limited now. He's leaving. Will that policy change? I don't think it will. The Australians had a 60-cap policy, I think, a minimum 60-cap policy of who was eligible to go abroad and still play for their national team. Maybe that is a good idea, but I understand why Joe Schmidt fought so hard for this. Well, what is a policy that's still not an actual policy? it's a strange one, isn't it? Yeah. But I understand, and you know, you want to keep all your best players at your beck and call, under your supervision. I get it completely, but it's just when it's someone like Zeebo or Donnacha Ryan who can still have something to, you know, to contribute. You know, it's the personalities involved makes it difficult to stick hard and fast to your rules. It's lucky none of us are in charge of the island management.
God forbid,
because there'd be no one left to pick. They'd all be in the Premiership or the top 14. But yeah, it will run and run, but it in a way, it's a futile conversation because the RFU are sticking to their guns, and I don't blame them in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a what's if that we'll never know really at this stage. Maybe that'll change down the line.
Not playing this weekend anyway.
Not for Ireland anyway. So that's it for this edition of the Irish Examiner World Cup podcast. We've got a fantastic weekend coming ahead. Ireland may not be in action, but we have Japan and Samoa playing, which obviously has a bearing on our group. And then you have England versus Argentina and France versus Tonga. So that group is going to go a long way to being decided. So the Irish Examiner Rugby World Cup podcast with the Nissan Leaf, the world's best-selling electric vehicle. Book a test drive today at nissan.ie. Nissan. Innovation that excites.